The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Good afternoon. Going out to Dr. Brittany Dean, and we're in red today.
Good afternoon. I hope everybody had a great weekend. I came to the Innovative Media Mix. Did you come, babe?
Yes, yeah. I did pass through on Saturday.
It was very entertaining. It was very informative. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And I hope that everybody that came out, you know, took something away and was able to get what they came for.
Definitely.
So, yes, I had a very good weekend. And, of course, we want to encourage the listeners to call in, ask their questions. While we may be talking about a specific topic today, we still answer any type of question medically related.
Of course.
You know, so WhatsApp us your questions, call in, let's have a conversation. Or even if you have any stories that you want people to learn from, you can call in and we can listen to them and have a conversation about it.
All right, our numbers are 627-3223, 625-2257, and WhatsApp messages only 3061065. Of course, feel free to message our other frequencies and they will send your questions right to us here in studio.
Right. So today's topic is going to be one that many people tend to shy away from, especially us in the Caribbean. We think it's a little bit of a taboo to speak about it or even to discuss, you know, the symptoms, the signs, anything surrounding it. So today we are going to speak about HIV and AIDS, because not a lot of people are educated fully on this topic. And I feel like it's very important for us to bring it to light, for us to break that stigma that is attached to it, as well as just inform the general public on things to look out for, things to avoid, precautions to take when it comes to HIV and AIDS, and also debunk any myths that people may have surrounding HIV. So let's just start off by talking about what HIV is and what AIDS is.
Yeah.
So HIV is, well, the short term for human immunodeficiency virus. And what this essentially means is that it is a virus that attacks our own immune system. So when we have our immune system, this protects us from outside pathogens, meaning any bacteria, any fungus, any germs that may come into contact with us and our bodies. So our body naturally is able to attack these bacteria or fungi or parasites and, you know, clear it out of our system so that we don't get infections, so that we don't get complications, etc.
Yeah.
But HIV, being a virus, it comes into the body, it attaches to what is known as a T helper cell. And when I'm talking about a T helper cell, what I want people to imagine is if you're calling a 911 operator, the 911 operator is that person that is responsible for sending the proper resources to whatever problem you're having. Mm-hmm. So if you're having a fire, they're going to send the fire truck. If you're having a domestic dispute, they're going to send the police. So they know which cells or which people to send to your problem. So we can think of these T helper cells in our bodies as the 911 operators. They are the ones that signal to the appropriate cells or the appropriate cells in our immune system which infection is coming and what to do to fight off that infection.
Right.
Now, HIV attaches to these T helper cells and they use the cell to replicate. And when it replicates, it destroys all these T helper cells in our bodies. Mm-hmm. And what that leaves us open to, or leaves people who are affected with HIV open to, is a lot of different infections, because your body is not able to decipher what infection is coming and how to fight it off, or it may not even fight it off. So that is essentially what the human immunodeficiency virus is. Now, there's a big myth or a misconception that surrounds HIV and AIDS. A lot of people think it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want people to understand is this. Not everybody who is infected with HIV has AIDS.
Right.
But everybody who has AIDS is infected with HIV.
Oh, say that again.
So, not everybody who has HIV has AIDS.
That's right.
But everybody who has AIDS mm-hmm. has been infected with HIV.
Okay.
So AIDS is the acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, mm-hmm. and this is the end spectrum of HIV.
Right.
This is what happens when HIV goes untreated.
Yeah.
So there are many different aspects of this virus, and that is why it's important for us to be educated on it, for the public to be educated on it, to know that being diagnosed with HIV, it's no longer a death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
There are treatments that are available. And in fact, in 2021, studies came out that HIV is actually as treatable as high blood pressure.
Wow.
Because once high blood pressure is left untreated, it can have detrimental effects. You can have strokes, you can have heart attacks,
mm-hmm.
and if HIV goes untreated, mm-hmm. you can have detrimental effects as well.
Okay.
And that would be AIDS leading you to gain all these different infections in your body. But there are treatments now that are available, and with the proper medical care and proper medical attention, people with HIV mm-hmm. can live normal lives once they are doing what they are supposed to do
mm-hmm.
and once they are properly taking care of themselves, getting themselves tested, seeing their doctor every few months or however long you are supposed to wait before you're seeing your doctor, because everybody has their own tailored management.
Right.
So there are certain misconceptions that we have to kind of break down.
I know another
misconception
a lot of people think, well, probably back in the day, I don't know if still know, that it's a really gay, homosexual disease and you have to be mostly promiscuous people get the
right.
HIV.
So this is a very big one that we also have to debunk. And it is not true that HIV discriminates because it doesn't. So HIV does not discriminate against your gender. It does not discriminate against your race or your sexual orientation. In fact, HIV can be transmitted, as we all know, through sexual contact, through bodily fluids. But there are other ways that people can get HIV. And this is through sharing needles, or if they're sharing any type of medical equipment, things that you are supposed to have for yourself, you know, things that if they inject it in themselves, you're not supposed to inject in you, right? And they also miss the fact that there's vertical transmission. And when I'm talking about vertical transmission, I'm talking about mother to baby. So if the mummy is infected with HIV and she is left untreated during her pregnancy, she exposes the baby to HIV. And through the body, it can be through breast milk or breastfeeding. And this is why we encourage mothers who are infected with HIV during pregnancy not to breastfeed their children. And, you know, there's a story that I have on this personally that I have experienced. And it is very important for the public to know and to be educated. Because, you know, in my time working in the pediatric system, we had a little baby, or he was about 3-4 years old, come in, and he came in with recurrent UTI infections. Now, you don't really bat an eye at a UTI infection all the time, right? You know, you just treat it if the baby is not, if they're not cleaning the baby properly, etc. This is usually what can occur in some infants.
Right.
But what stood out to us is that the baby had little swollen lymph nodes on the body. And the mom, she didn't think that it was relevant to tell us that she was infected with HIV during pregnancy and that she was breastfeeding the baby, because she didn't know. She didn't know. She wasn't educated on HIV to say that she knew not to breastfeed the baby, because that would cause the baby to end up getting HIV. And when we tested the child, he ended up being HIV positive. So it was a very sad story, and shows that it is very important for us to educate the patients and educate the public so that they are aware, so that they can even spread the correct information around and let others know that there are certain things that should and should not be done if you are diagnosed. So not everybody, of course, if you're diagnosed with HIV, you're not going around telling people that you are diagnosed with HIV, because it is a personal thing. It is a, it's a personal diagnosis, like all diagnoses that we have. But it is important if you are having sexual contact with somebody.
I'm going to say, well, if you are in a relationship.
Yes, it is very important that you disclose that information because there are things that can be done.
Is it against the law to not do that, to have, you know, relations with somebody and don't, and you don't, and you infect them?
So if you are knowingly infecting somebody, it is somewhat of a charge. So I'm not too sure what it will be under. I'm not too sure if, you know, what charge it will be brought up on. But if you are knowingly going around spreading this infection, it is something that I would say is very unethical. And it's something, you know, that we don't approve of. Like, of course, we're not going to approve of that. You need to get tested. You need to tell anybody that you've had sexual contact with to get tested, etc. So there is a lot to take in when it comes to this virus. And there's a lot to take in when it comes to the full-blown virus. But people need to be educated on it. People need to know the symptoms to look out for, the preventative measures to go through, etc.
And as you mentioned, the symptoms, what are some of the typical symptoms? Because somebody could be looking, you know, like you, like me, you know, being normal, and they could have HIV or even AIDS. But what are some of the symptoms to look out for?
Right. So in order to know the symptoms, you have to know that HIV has different stages. So you have the acute stage of HIV, you have the chronic stage, and you also have the final stage, which is full-blown AIDS. So in the acute stage, this usually happens 2 weeks after the infection. People may present with normal infection signs, such as fever, malaise, fatigue. They may have swelling of the lymph nodes. They may have sores or rashes. They may have even ulcers in the mouth or in the genital areas. But some people may be asymptomatic, meaning that they may not even know that they are experiencing this at that moment. And this is where your medical history becomes very important. And this is where precautions become very important. Because if you are experiencing these symptoms, then if you've known that you've had sexual contact with somebody that you are unaware of their medical history, or somebody that you don't know, or other factors that are involved that put you at risk for getting a sexually transmitted disease, then it's something that you need to go to your doctor for. It is something that you need to get checked out, because the earlier the detection, the easier it is for you to get treatment and to manage the condition. Now, that would be in the acute phase. Now, when we go into the chronic phase, and this can last about 10 years in some people, it can last even less in some people, depending on what comorbidities you may have, etc. Some people are asymptomatic at this point. They may not know that they have this infection. And that is why it's so important, if you are, you know, putting yourself in certain positions, that you get tested on a regular basis, because you can be asymptomatic and you don't know. Now, when you get to AIDS or the acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, and let me just make a point to say this, that if HIV goes untreated in about 8 to 10 years, it can progress to full-blown AIDS. And when we're talking about AIDS, that means that your body no longer has those T helper cells or those CD4 cells in your body to tell the body, well, okay, this infection is coming, so we need to recruit these cells so that we can fight it off. And that puts you at risk for what we call opportunistic infections. And opportunistic infections are the infections that basically take the opportunity to come into your body that a normal immune system like you or I, we are able to fight off very easily. But those with AIDS, they are unable to do that. And when you have these opportunistic infections, they can range from many different things, from bacteria to fungi to even cancers. And you have what we call AIDS-defining cancers or AIDS-defining infections. So if we know somebody has HIV and they have a specific infection or they have a specific cancer, then we know that it's AIDS-defining, meaning that their disease has progressed to full-blown AIDS.
All right, folks, of course, 627-3223-625-2257. We do have some WhatsApp messages coming up. And after the break, we will be answering some of your questions there. Of course, if you're experiencing difficulty with bowel movements, try Nutrafiber. It contains a unique blend of soluble fibers to aid the digestion and your chronic constipation, right? Alleviate your chronic constipation. This can be a particular challenge for diabetics. Incorporating Nutrafiber into your daily nutrition offers diabetics patients the following advantages. Restore intestinal function, enhance beneficial bacteria balance, and assist in reducing chronic constipation. To use Nutrafiber mix, the recommended with water or your preferred beverage once or twice daily. Be guided by your health professional. It is essential to adhere to the provided usage instructions on the product packaging. Right, take a step towards improving your intestinal health today by using Nutrafiber. Give yourself the opportunity to live a better and healthier life, especially if you face chronic constipation due to diabetes. Of course, you listen to the Lunchtime Doctor. We take a small break and we come back. Also, give yourself the care you deserve. Treat yourself with the state-of-the-art medical technology and medical professionals that put your health first. Health City Cayman Islands is here to provide you and yours with the care and healing you need. They are full-service healthcare provider operating in the Cayman Islands to ensure that the entire Caribbean region can access quality health care. Call Health City now at 868-720-4019. That's 720-4019. And reach us via email at tt@healthcity.ky. For full details on their services, visit healthcitycaymanislands.com. That's healthcitycaymanislands.com. Health City, leading you to your best health. All right, folks, and as I promised, we get to some of your questions that were coming in right after the break. Hi, doctor. I am a male, age 59. My fasting blood sugar is 103, and 2 hours after, it is 120. Is that good? Thanks.
Yes. So that will be within range for normal blood sugar, so that is good. So whatever you're doing, continue doing it.
But how come it would raise from 103 to 120? Maybe
because
they have something
you're eating.
To eat.
Yeah. Yeah. So after, so if you're fasting, that means that you did not have anything to eat, and then right after, if you do eat something, your blood sugar will spike because your insulin levels will spike as well, and of course it will increase. But if it increases substantially, then it becomes a problem after a certain number. Then you know we look to see. Come in, let's have a discussion, let's do a few tests and see if you need to be diagnosed with diabetes or pre-diabetes.
All right, good day, doctor. How can someone get the H. pylori test via blood test?
So the H. pylori test, we usually do something called the urea breath test. Usually that is done in the hospital if they suspect that you do have a gastric ulcer that is caused by the H. pylori bacteria. There is an antibody test, which is the blood test. I am not too certain. I can't remember if we do it in the hospital. I'm not too certain if we do that in the hospital, but they may provide it in private hospitals or private institutions that do blood tests. Because there are certain tests that require certain mediums or certain criteria for you to meet, and the hospital may not have every single test.
All right, 1226, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. Dr. Brittany Dean on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5, and Sangit 106.1. Let's get back into our topic of the HIV. So let's just say someone goes, they do a blood test, right? A test. So is that the only way, first of all, to test for HIV or AIDS?
So we do the blood test down here, and yes, more than likely, it is the only way. However, what I would say is, remember that I was speaking about these opportunistic infections. If we suspect somebody has this opportunistic infection, then we more than likely know this person has full-blown AIDS.
Right.
And then we will do the blood tests. Then we'll do the PCR test or the ELISA. It's a lot of immunological tests that go into it. But if we do suspect that somebody has HIV, we definitely test them one time. And it is done on a a private basis. So we don't use a patient's name. We don't use their full name. We do use a code so that, you know, the patient has that privacy and it is intact, you know.
Privacy in Trinidad.
Definitely. We do have privacy. And we do have clinics that treat patients with HIV infections. We do have infectious disease clinic. For example, if you do have a complicated infection or complications of HIV, there are infectious disease clinics that deal with these patients as well. Right. So we are equipped to deal with patients with HIV and with patients with AIDS.
So that was going to be my next question. Somebody goes in, the tests are positive. Well, what is the next step? And what is the steps, any steps taken to make sure that they attend these clinics, the clinics, to make sure that they do what they're supposed to do? Is there any follow-up with them? You say you give them a code, but how do we ensure that this person really follows the code, so to speak?
So the code is really just for the blood test.
Right.
So it's just to protect a patient's privacy when we are performing the tests, so the labs are performing the tests. And basically, once the person is diagnosed fully with HIV, so there's a series of different tests that are done. For example, if a positive test comes back with the PCR, then we do a confirmatory test just to make sure that it's not a false positive. And once that is positive as well, the patient is referred to the HIV clinic. And we have the MRFTT clinic right in Trinidad in Port of Spain. It is the most robust and biggest HIV clinic in the Caribbean. So it is usually up to the patient to make sure and go for their follow-up. Yes. Unfortunately, it is up to the patient to ensure that they go for their follow-up. And most patients actually do, because when they come into the hospital, they usually come in because of a complication. They usually come in because of an infection or some type of you know, related copy. So a lot of people don't want that to progress to full-blown AIDS unless you are somebody that is diagnosed with a mental condition. Then we do try to take steps to ensure that you get that treatment, you get that antiretroviral therapy, whether it be in the hospital, whether it be where you are institutionalized, etc.
I don't want to make it sound like, you know, like is in prison or something, but you know, like when you go for, like when you charge, you're on parole, you know, you have to go and sign in at the book in the station every couple of weeks or something. You don't think of, like, maybe somebody with HIV should have to be the same thing, like sign just to make sure they go
that through, that, you know, they do.
That's not
I agree to an extent, but remember, we do have people do have free choice, and it's not up to us to essentially take away that choice from them.
But our family members, let's say somebody, a man comes in with HIV and he's married, and his wife does not accompany him, what's done to make sure that his wife knows?
So essentially, it is, we try to tell the patient, okay, you need to bring in your wife, you need to bring in somebody that you've had sexual contact with. And for some patients, it is difficult for them to tell their spouse, or it's difficult for them to tell their partner that they are infected with this virus. So we try to make it easy. We try to tell them to bring in the person that they want us to speak to.
Their discretion.
Yes, but we do try to, we can recommend partner testing and alert social workers to the case that is going on. So they are responsible for informing this person or informing the partners about this patient. But at the end of the day, we do our best to ensure that there's the psychological help, that there's the stress-related help in terms of if they need any psych visits, if they need any psychology reviews, etc. But at the crux of it all, it is up to the patient. And unfortunately, there aren't any implementations in Trinidad. It is more rigid in other countries, I would say.
Well, but it
there
should be.
Yes. But there are not many laws that are implemented to ensure that patients or make sure that patients get their treatment.
All right, we need to get that in the parliament. And what about advanced, well, the testing methods you've just, anything improved?
So like I said, you know, once you go to the hospital and we do suspect maybe from your history, maybe from the infection that you have, that you may have HIV or you may have AIDS, we do the blood tests in the hospital. But there are advancements. There are advancements in the testing protocols now. We have rapid HIV tests, which are usually the ones, like I said before, that we perform in the hospital. And if it's positive, then we do a confirmatory test, which will take a little longer. But then there are home testing kits now. They are not readily available in Trinidad. However, I think that we should make them readily available in Trinidad because there are people who will stay at home and will know that they have had this contact with this person, but they are afraid to know. They are afraid to go to the hospital. So home testing kits will give them that information that they need and ensure that, you know, if they do see that they want to go to the hospital, they want to get the medication. And this is why it's important for education and for people to be educated on this now, because people will know that there are medications that they can take. Like I said, it's not a death sentence. You have HIV, you take your medication, and you can live a normal life. And there are cases, and once people are taking their medication, once they are doing the proper protocols, once they are doing their follow-ups, they're doing their blood tests to detect the T helper cell levels and the viral load levels, then once we know that your viral load becomes undetectable, meaning that it cannot be picked up by a test, that means that you are not transmissible. That means that, you know, you can have sexual contact with somebody without transmitting the virus. But this only comes when you take your medication, when you follow protocols, when you do everything that you are supposed to do. And in order to do that, you need to be educated on it. Because people think, if I'm diagnosed with HIV, well, that's the end of my life. And it's not, you know. It is, like I said, it is as treatable as high blood pressure. It's as treatable as diabetes. So it's very important for us to get that information out there.
Definitely. Well, so what are some of the lifestyle changes, like you just mentioned, of course, taking your medication and precautions that people living with AIDS should take to maintain their health? Can you still be sexually active while you have HIV or AIDS? Depends. Could a condom still be used? Some people still use, they could use a contraceptive, and you know, even though they are infected.
So what I want to mention is that there are different types of contraceptives, and there are contraceptives that can decrease your risk of STDs, such as condoms, right? If a woman is taking a birth control pill, etc., that is not going to decrease your risk of an STD. But if you, like I said before, if you have HIV and the viral load in your body becomes undetectable, meaning that it cannot be detected by any type of test that we perform, and this only comes with taking your medication, etc., and these are antiretrovirals, so that means that it stops the virus from replicating in the body. If it becomes undetectable, and I'm being very careful when I say this here, if it becomes undetectable, that means that that it's not transmissible, meaning that you can have unprotected sex. I'm not saying that you should have unprotected sex, but not transmit the virus, right? And we always try to precaution everybody that we know that have been diagnosed with HIV to use protection when you can, only if the viral load is not transmissible or it's undetectable. If you have something that is detectable, that means that it's transmissible, and you need to take those precautions by not having sexual contact, by not coming into sexual contact with somebody. And I'm being very cautious when I say this, because it is only sexual contact, bodily fluids, and like I mentioned before, if you're sharing needles, anything that transmits bodily fluids or vertical transmission, etc., it is only those types of things that can transmit HIV. You cannot get HIV from shaking a hand, from sharing a spoon or a fork, you cannot get HIV like that. And this is where breaking the stigma comes. So if you know somebody is diagnosed with HIV, people tend to want to stay away from that person. They don't want to be in the same room as that person. And that is, it's not the case. It's not airborne. COVID is more airborne than HIV, right? It's not airborne. You can't get it from sitting on a toilet seat. You can't get it from just touching a person's hand. That is not how it's transmitted. But like I said, there's a stigma attached around it, and it's very important to break that stigma.
Speaking of stigma, what about that discrimination, like in the workplace and these sort of things where HIV is concerned? Did somebody let their co-workers or workers know or employees know that they have HIV?
So it really depends, because if you know that you are undetectable and you know that you are taking your medications, you are doing everything that you are supposed to do, and it is not going to affect you in any way in terms of your work, it is your private information. Right? You do not have to let everybody surrounding you know, especially if you're not having sexual contact with that person, especially if you are not engaging in any type of behavior such as, you know, sharing needles, stuff like that.
Well, what if you work in a kitchen and you could cut yourself?
Well, that becomes a very, you know, there's a very like small line in between that. So in terms like in a term like that, I would suggest that you do take your precautions, especially if you're working in a kitchen and you are at a point where, you know, you can get injured. Wear gloves if you are cutting. You know, you take your precautions because you don't want other people to get infected. And in that case, in a case where you know that you're in a job that puts you at a high risk of transmission in terms of injury, then you let your employer know. And it is important that you maintain this type of confidentiality with your employer, because it is not their place to tell other people. It is between you and them, just like doctor-patient confidentiality is very important between the patient and I. So I'm not allowed to tell another doctor this patient has that unless the doctor is seeing about the patient in a certain way. So we cannot discuss patients. We cannot discuss what they have. We cannot do anything like that. We cannot break confidentiality. And I want patients to know this so that they don't hide anything from their doctors. You know, it is illegal for us to actually disclose this information unless it is medically relevant.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned before that you could have the HIV virus and you not know. So there may be a lot of people walking around there and they don't know.
So this is what the CDC recommends in terms of HIV and AIDS. And I'm going to say it word for word in terms of how they recommend and who they recommend should get tested every single year. And the first one is people who have had unprotected sex. And this is sex without a condom, right? This does not mean that because you are taking birth control pills, you should not get tested. I'm talking about sex without a condom because, like I said, there are certain contraceptives that can protect you from STDs, and condoms are one of them, right? So people who have unprotected sex, and this is another group of people that need to get tested every single year. Men who have sex with men. And this is another group that needs to be tested. This is exactly based on what the CDC says, right? The other group is people who have other sexually transmitted diseases. And this would include things like gonorrhea, things like syphilis, things like chlamydia. People who exchange sex for money. And they should also get tested every year, because and not in every single situation you will be wearing a condom. You don't know what certain people have, etc. So those are the main groups of people that need to get tested every single year, and especially people who share needles, whether it be due to drug abuse or due to other factors. People who share needles should get tested every single year as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks, we take another break. It's 18 minutes away from 1 o'clock. Of course, we're discussing HIV and AIDS. And when we come back, we read some of your other messages that are there. Once again, if you're experiencing difficulty with your bowel movement, right, try Nutrafiber. It contains a unique blend of soluble fibers to aid digestion and alleviate chronic constipation. This can be a particular challenge for diabetics. Incorporating Nutrafiber into your daily nutrition offers diabetic patients the following advantages. Restore intestinal function, enhance beneficial bacteria balance, assist in reducing chronic constipation. To use Nutrafiber, mix the recommended amount with water or your preferred beverage once or twice daily. Be guided by your health care professional. It is essential to adhere to the provided usage directions on the product packaging. Take a step towards improving your intestinal health today by using Nutrafiber. Give yourself the opportunity to live a better and healthier lifestyle, especially if you face chronic constipation due to diabetes. We're coming back. All right, folks, back at you. Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5, and Sangeet 106.1. Lunchtime Doctor. Numbers, of course, 627-3223, 625-2257 for any of your medical questions. Of course, 306-1065. Question. Yesterday, I had an episode where I started to black out and where my hearing went incoherent. It is throughout that my blood sugar went down. So I had two doubles and some sweets, and I tested my blood sugar. When I went home and gave it a reading of 153, however, even after eating, it took a couple of hours for the rest to recover. Is this normal with low blood sugar?
Now, I would say that the fainting episode or the dizziness and the blacking out, yes, that can be consistent with hypoglycemia, and this is where you have low blood sugar levels, especially in somebody who is diabetic. And based on the reading that he gave there, that 150 something, I would say that this person is more than likely diabetic. If you know he's not fully diagnosed now, I suggest that he goes to his doctor, get his HbA1c done, get his proper blood sugar tested, and let them diagnose and manage you appropriately, because this is very common in patients with diabetes if they don't eat properly and if they're not taking their meds properly, etc.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay, we got another statement here. Thank you, Bez and Doctor, for discussing the HIV and AIDS, and Bez about raising the point about the laws. There are so many people going out of their marriages and relationships and could bring home something to their significant other. And there are no laws governing this.
Yes. So, like we were talking about on air, there needs to be laws that do govern people to tell their spouses and to ensure that people that they are having contact with know about their status and know about, you know, all the complications that come with this and know that there are resources out there that can help.
Let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, presenter, doctor, present, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Doctor, I want to find out something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right now, I am fasting, right?
Yes.
And my fasting daily with a little sip of water in between is 23 hours daily.
Mm-hmm.
And I started off today the fourth day, but my fast is good for 23 hours. I want to know what could be responsible, aside from spirituality and them kind of thing, what could be responsible for I doing 23 hours daily with just a little water. I just want our listeners here. Thanks again for the opportunity.
I'm a little confused as to...
I'm confused. What is your question, really? You want us to tell you why you fasting?
Yeah, I'm not too sure, because is it a choice or do you just not have appetite? You know? And if you don't have an appetite, this can be due to a lot of different reasons and a lot of different factors. And is it because you just don't feel like eating? Is it because, you know, you
I think he's calling back.
Yes.
Hello, caller?
Yeah, what I want to know, doctor, is if the body has to be in good health and strength that I am able to do that. That is what I want to know.
Yes.
Yeah,
so you want to fast. You want to fast for 23 hours.
Yeah.
ideally, I would not recommend fasting for so long. If you would like to fast, then, you know, you can do intermittent fasting. And these have shown to have proper effects in people with diabetes. It has actually been shown to decrease your HbA1c, etc. I would not recommend fasting for such a long period of time and just taking a little sip of water in between, etc. Because if you do have a comorbidity such as diabetes, then fasting for so long of a period can put you at risk for hypoglycemia, especially if you are taking medications, etc. And yes, your body should be in, you know, a proper healthy condition. Not having any type of comorbidities, not taking any type of medication for management, etc., before fasting for prolonged periods of time, because your body still needs nourishment. You still need food to survive. You still need proper nourishment in your body so that it can function properly. And if you are diabetic, if you are hypertensive and you're taking certain medications, you not nourishing your body properly can have detrimental effects on these medications.
Well, 23, that sounds like a hunger strike. All right, so once again, we are discussing HIV and AIDS as we go back into. So are there any promising research? A lot of people are saying, by in 2024, this AIDS has been around since the late 70s, 80s. How come there is no cure for it?
Right. So there are so many diseases that we don't have a cure for, unfortunately. We just have not reached that level of advancement in medicine yet. yes, so we don't have a cure for cancer. Yeah. We don't have a cure for HIV. But the research continues to explore new treatments, and there are long-acting injectable therapies and gene editing techniques that are coming out now. Also, what people don't realize is that the virus mutates. So as years go on, the virus mutates so that if you did find a cure for something in 1990 or something, what we have now is probably not the same thing as what we had then, because viruses mutate, and we see that with the influenza virus every year, and that's why we have to take a flu shot every year. But there are new strategies for HIV protection, and we have vaccines and pre-exposure prophylaxis. So this is for patients who have come into contact with somebody who have had HIV, had bodily fluids exchanged, etc. And for example, doctors, if we get a needle stick from somebody who has had HIV or who has been diagnosed with HIV, we are sent to do pre-exposure prophylaxis. And that's where we take the medication for a stipulated period of time, and then we do our testing, etc.
I know back in the day, but I don't know if it still exists, but a lot of people got HIV and it's through a blood transfusion. That still exists.
Yes. So, now the blood transfusion protocols are very rigid, and they test all the bloods for different diseases, HIV, hepatitis, anything that can be transmitted through blood, it is tested for before giving that donor blood to somebody. But there are cases where, somebody may get a blood transfusion reaction, but more than likely, that person will also be placed on post-exposure or after-exposure prophylaxis, like I mentioned before. Mm. So they will be put on the therapies and they will be tested after that stipulated amount of time.
Well, I know you're a doctor, you're not an insurance agent, but do you know of any insurance that covers HIV? Let's say somebody with their spouse and they were supposed to, they died through HIV. Is any insurance coverage with that? Does insurance coverage cover you getting treatment?
So that is a very good question. What I would say is, if you have medical insurance, they do take into account what diseases that you have been diagnosed with, especially if you have the diagnosis already. And they do take into consideration diseases that you may be diagnosed with, and they send you to a doctor to get a medical, etc. But not to my knowledge, there's no actual insurance company that covers all these things, unless you are in the hospital, you've had insurance already, and there are certain things that you need covered, for example, surgeries, etc., if you have an AIDS-defining cancer.
All right, and can you share some success stories, any success stories of people who have been living with HIV and AIDS?
So, like I said before, we have the MRFTT, or one of the biggest clinics that treat HIV and AIDS. And there are many people in Trinidad and Tobago that live with HIV and lead fulfilling and supporting and supportive lives because of their healthcare providers, because they're taking their proper treatments. They have good treatment regimens that they're placed on, and they have communities that support them through, you know, psychological therapy, etc. And once you do go to your clinic follow-up and you say, okay, well, I'm not feeling well today, or I don't feel in a proper frame of mind, etc., they do help you. They do send you for counseling. They do have support groups to help with these type of diagnoses. So once you are able to manage your condition effectively, you can pursue your goals, you can maintain your relationships and contribute to society. You can live very fulfilling lives. You know, like I said before, it is not a death sentence.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of our friends and family supporting, I know you mentioned the clinics, but how was that support, especially that psychological and that mental support? Where do we go with that?
Right. So it is always better to get support from people that are close to you, because they are people that you're comfortable with. Once you have close friends and family members who can support you, they will provide that type of emotional support. They will provide practical assistance with their daily tasks, accompanying you to your medical appointments, as well as advocating for your needs, advocating for people with HIV. And there are many stories where we have patients who come in with their friends and their family members, and they'll be like, yes, they know, so it's fine. You can, whatever you're telling me, you can tell them as well. Mm-hmm. But not everybody has that support of a family member, etc. That's why I said there are communities. You know, we do have counseling sessions. We do build communities so that you can have that support. Even if it's not in somebody that is close to you, you will have it from maybe somebody who has also been diagnosed with HIV and somebody who has gone through the treatment regimens and know exactly what is going to happen and know that you can live that fulfilling life because they have done it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we have just about 3 more minutes, and to wrap up, what message would you like to leave our listeners with regarding HIV and AIDS, awareness, prevention, and support?
So, of course, I want to emphasize the importance of HIV and AIDS awareness and, like you said, prevention and support. So it's always crucial for you to know your status. It is very crucial. And I think we had a campaign a while back
know your status.
About yeah. knowing your status, because knowing your status can help you get the treatment that you need, get the management and the support that you need. It is always important to practice safe behaviors, you know, not, you know, engaging in risky behaviors, whether it be sexual, whether it be through drugs, or whether it be, you know, just different types of risky behaviors. And it's important to support those affected by HIV and AIDS, because it's not just the virus that they're dealing with. It is the emotional and mental turmoil. Because like I said before, as much as I'm saying that it's not a death sentence, somebody can be diagnosed with HIV today and still feel like their life has ended. So it's very important for us me as a clinician and other doctors, as well as people that they know, to give them that supporting ear, that supporting hand, and to ensure them that they can live proper and fulfilling lives. And we need to work together to create a world that's free from stigma and discrimination. And with continued efforts, with support from everybody in the community, we can continue to make significant strides in this fight against HIV and AIDS.
Mm-hmm. Okay, folks, so that's where we wrap it up for today. Of course, very healthy discussion. I think another thing we should talk about, and this is the importance of sex education in schools.
Yes.
Which is something we keep breaking away,
exactly.
away from.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Bayes tell the doctor all viruses was man-created, and they have the cure for all, but the pharmaceutical industry won't strive.
I think Bayes just wanted to say that.
No, somebody.
I know it's somebody.
Somebody actually. But you know, people have their conspiracy theories.
Yes, yes.
and all this sort of thing. All right, folks, so we join you again tomorrow for another edition of the Lunchtime Doctor, where we will have another interesting topic to you. Of course, do enjoy the rest of your day. Keep it locked onto Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5, and of course, Sangeet 106.1 FM.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.